We're back. We are back. How's it going? I gotta say, it feels good. It's the last hour of the show before the long weekend, huh? JR, Hammer, and that is Gord Wilson, the dulcet tones of one G.W. Goody Wilson, who's sitting in for a Simmer again today. And Gord has NP, no plans apparently for this weekend, other than shepherding children to summer jobs.
You know what? I may shirk those responsibilities and just sneak up to the old cottage by myself.
Yes, there are other drivers in the family, Gord.
Absolutely.
Some of them may be busy hosting, you know, CTV Ottawa news programs for some of the weekend, but not last time I checked. I didn't see Patricia Bowl hosting on the weekend. She's too big time for that. She can do some driving.
She's done her share of weekends.
Absolutely.
No, we'll see. We're going to let it play out.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Well, even if you can sneak up, looks like tomorrow, okay, Monday, and which is the last day, but Monday might be the nicest day of the weekend, at least as far as the weather is concerned. So there you go. All right. Well, it's not for this weekend. But how about we make some plans for next St. Patrick's Day for somebody right now? I know it's a long way off, but you're thinking about it. No, you're probably not. But let us take care of it for you anyway. Pair of tickets we're going to give away right now. This is our last pair of Beat the Box Office tickets to see comedian Sebastian Maniscalco. He has the Nobody Does This tour coming to Ottawa next St. Patrick's Day. Pair of tickets right now to caller number 15 at 613-750-1200 or star 1200. A free call on Bell. Caller 15 will win a pair of tickets to the show. By the way, if you want to go see Sebastian Maniscalco, and he's really funny, the tickets will go on sale through Ticketmaster.ca at 10 o'clock this morning. Who's your favorite comedian, Gordy? If I could say to you, somebody comes to town, you would actually pay Gord Wilson dollars to go see. Is there anybody?
Well, you know what? Matt, during one of the breaks, came out of break with a clip of Jerry Seinfeld and happened to see Jerry the last time he was in town, and it was just absolutely incredible. Dean and I did this thing at Canadian Tire Center several years ago as well, and the comedian escapes me. Jeremy was his name?
Jeremy Hotz?
Yeah, Jeremy Hotz. Yes, exactly. He was fantastic as well. He had a real different sense of humor.
It's Canadian.
And a good Canadian boy. Mm-hmm. But I would, Seinfeld's the easy one for me.
Yeah, I saw Jerry Seinfeld at the NAC. I think if you saw the last one, he did one, it probably was 10 years ago that I saw him. And I mean, there's nobody who does observational humor better than him. Right?
No, obviously. Yeah, for sure.
I mean, there's different kind of humor, right? Chris Rock back in the day, that was all about just being, you know, audibly stunned by the amount of F-bombs he could drop, but it was still really funny. And Canadians have a different sense of humor than Americans as well, right? But Jerry Seinfeld's, his humor, the ironic humor.
A bad word mentioned.
Exactly.
But if you're a fan of bad words, and I certainly don't mind them. I don't shy away from them. Who's the comedian, the bald guy, Bill?
Bill Burr.
Fantastic.
If you're a fan of bald guys.
Very
funny.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yes. But very, very raunchy. But very, very funny. Like a hilarious funny.
Also a favorite of our own Steve Lloyd.
Steve Lloyd likes to send out Bill Burr clips.
Who is the guy, Hammer, the very funny guy with the beard, kind of bald head, but the beard?
A little bit overweight as well. Is this the guy that loves to have his shirt off?
I don't remember that, but I'm gapping on his name right now. He did a show as well here in Ottawa. That was very funny. And who's the guy we play? Who's the guy? No. Who's the guy we played the clips of that I always laugh at?
Gaffigan?
Yeah.
Jim Gaffigan?
Jim Gaffigan.
He's fantastic.
Yeah. Very good.
And clean.
He's got like 9 kids, doesn't he?
He does.
Yeah,
that's a whole lot of,
I think he's got about 7 or 8.
That's where a lot of your material can come from. If you're a good comedian, a lot of your material will come from your family, right?
From in-house.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Do we have a winner, Matt?
We have a winner. Kyle Pickett is the winner to a pair of passes to Sebastian Maniscalco.
Way to go, Kyle. Congratulations to everybody that won tickets this week to go see that show. And again, tickets go on sale this morning, 10 a.m. through Ticketmaster.ca. Got a couple of wrenches that have piled up as the morning has gone on, including a one from from Charlene. Boys, can I get a kick in the balls wrench to JR, please, about Marc-Andre Fleury winning 3 cups and not 1? That's from Charlene.
It's a kick in the balls for us.
Oh my gosh. You have that kind of wrench, eh? All right.
Yes, sir.
Via Matt Duchesne.
Well, yeah, Matt. Yeah. Matt said all the right things, didn't he?
Yes.
No, he did. You know, we were in, can I very quickly jump in here?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're in Colorado.
Hey, Gord, can I stop you?
Yes.
Anything that gets us that much closer to the end of the show, very welcome right now. It's Friday before a long weekend.
Post game, we're in Colorado, and Matt is a member of the Ottawa Senators, and Matt didn't leave. I don't think he left the Avalanche on very good terms, to be very honest with you. And post game scrum, and I think he scored a goal in a loss. So regardless of the outcome, he was ecstatic with his own performance. And I like Matt. I think Matt's a great guy. But he says all the right things when he needs to. And we're post-game scrum, and there's myself and I think Ken Warren from Post Media, who are the only two Ottawa guys in this scrum. And Matt is talking about the game and his performance and how he loves Colorado and Denver is such a wonderful city and what a fantastic organization. And then just throws out off the top of his head, oh, and I could see myself ending up here to wrap up my career. And Ken Ward and I looked at each other and thought, what kind of statement is that? And it was as casual could be. And I could feel the Denver media and hear their snickers in the background going, are you an idiot? There's no chance. As long as Joe Sakic is the general manager of this team, there is no chance you will end up being back in Colorado. And now, you know, put on the unprotected list for Nashville and please take him, this, that. It's been an interesting road and career for Matt Duchesne.
Absolutely. Speaking of Matt, Matt has texted in and said, Brady Tkachuk doesn't deserve what Braden Point has earned. Sign the bridge and let's go. Wrench to microwavable bacon. And that's from Matt.
Jonas Donskoi.
There you go. I'm not sure what one had to do with the other, but I like that, juxtaposed against each other. And sure. And I certainly didn't raise Brady Tkachuk making Braden. Did you raise it and I didn't hear it, or did someone else in the station say it?
I don't think there's anybody saying
that Brady Tkachuk is going to get $9.5 million on his new contract. First of all, again, it's where you're at in as far as your negotiating window goes as well. Brady Tkachuk's coming out of his rookie deal. The Senators have his rights for four more years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Some of these contracts we're seeing signed by the likes of Braden Point and last night, Zach Werenski. These guys are much closer to UFA. Your leverage goes up each year that you are closer to unrestricted free agency because you can just say to your team and the general manager you're dealing with that, yeah, you know what? That's good, but I might want to test the market. That's only a year from now. So that, you know, leverage is a huge part of negotiations. And
well,
I don't want to say that Brady Tkachuk doesn't have any. He's got tons. He's got tons, especially in this market and with his popularity and the state of the team right now. He does have a lot. But the bottom line is the Senators have his rights for four more years.
Success has an awful lot to do with leverage as well. And Braden has earned all the leverage that he gets with the success that he's had. Okay. In the Conn Smythe conversation for the last 2 years, right up until probably the last game before the cup is won. This is how important and valuable this young man is to the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I believe you me, Brady Tkachuk is extremely valuable to the Ottawa Senators. And we're going to see his value when this team does make the playoffs. I have no doubt about that whatsoever. I think Brady Tkachuk is born to play playoff hockey.
I think fans would be salivating over that idea, right?
Absolutely.
And quite frankly,
And if this team can grow together, you know, if this nucleus can grow up together, it's going to be a fun one to watch. And I think a lot of people around the NHL, certainly from what I've heard, JR, I think a lot of people agree this could be a scary good team. If they grow up together and there are a few other pieces added, if a player like Tyler Boucher lives up to expectations and does all of a sudden become the next Tom Wilson. Let's be honest, okay? Tom Wilson was a big part of Washington's success a couple of years ago in winning the Stanley Cup.
That has been.
Yeah.
He was a huge part of that line with Kuznetsov and Ovechkin. You know, Kuznetsov was lights out. Ovechkin is Ovechkin. And Tom Wilson, I mean, he was playing first line minutes on the Stanley Cup winning team that year.
So if Tyler Boucher, who likens himself to Tom Wilson, can turn out to
be
a reincarnation of Tom Wilson 2.0, then you thank you.
Speaking of the right additions for the team, where does Gord Wilson come down? I threw it out there. I'm not saying that I was the first to say it, but the David Krejci thing is interesting to me only because, you know, several people have said in his public comments after the season was over, he, like Tuukka Rask, has said, I only want to play for the Bruins, and I'm not entertaining thoughts of playing anywhere else. Well, the Bruins, for people that didn't check, were one of the very busiest teams on free agency day. They signed a lot of players for a lot of money, none of them named David Krejci, and he remains unsigned. And the Boston Bruins, as we speak right now, I think the last time I checked, have about $800,000 in salary cap space, which is enough for David Krejci if he wants to play for the NHL minimum, but I don't think that he's interested in that, and one would have to think. Now, I think there's still very much a possibility that the Bruins will trade Jake DeBrusque. He just seems to have fallen out of favor with that organization. That will free up some money. David Krejci, if he wants to stay in Boston, is going to have to take a pretty significant pay cut. There's no doubt about that. And if they move DeBrusque out, maybe that finds the money for Krejci. But in the meantime, you know, maybe he's come to the realization that maybe it's just not going to work for me in Boston. And I know he's intimated that maybe he'd like to finish his career in the Czech Republic, although I saw some recent comments from him on that saying, you know, maybe that's, you know, maybe that's not as big a deal. He seems to be waffling, I guess, on his public comments for those that have said he's going to Boston and that's it. You know, those are, you know, players also can change their mind. So I guess after my long-winded diatribe, Gord Wilson, if he goes to, as interested in, opens himself up, do you think that David Krejci, A, would consider the Ottawa Senators, because that's a huge part of it. They're a non-playoff team. He's a guy toward the end of his career. And B, do you think he has game and would be a wise investment in the short term for the Ottawa Senators?
Well, your long-winded diatribe just got a little bit longer, but it's brought us a little bit closer to the end of the show here. But you know what? Respectfully, I will say, for those of us on the outside looking in, as far as being multimillionaires, okay, and you and I and Maddie, I think the three of us are as far away from being multimillionaires as the next guy.
Correct.
David Krejci, $70 million in career earnings, and he's coming off $7 million annual salary with the Boston Bruins that he signed in 2014, 6 years, $43 million, 43 and change. So he's making $7 million last year, and he now is looking for a job and thinks that he can get it in Boston, but at an extremely reduced rate. We often, those of us on the outside looking in the millionaire's life, say, how much is too much or how much is enough? Okay. Well, I can tell you, once you're a multimillionaire, you have zero issue making a few more millions of dollars. And David Krejci has the opportunity with one team out there of the 7 or 8 or 12 or 15, or maybe even as many as 25 teams that have shown an interest in him, of making a few more million dollars. And it's all well and good to say, yep, okay, I'm fine with Boston. But at $700,000, that might not be enough to keep him there. And if you're offered $2, $3, $4 million from the Ottawa Senators, the Montreal Canadiens, whomever it might be, my guess is you're thinking, well, too much is not enough. I'm good for another couple of million. Thank you very much. I'm moving on.
For those that asked yesterday when I threw out the idea, and if I, you know, I threw it out there that Krejci might be a perfect guy for Ottawa, should he consider it, for a couple of reasons. First of all, I still think he's got some, you know, because immediately you get kickback of anytime anybody's over 30 now, I call it the Stepan factor, where everybody just looks at the birthday and go, he's the next Derek Stepan.
Yeah.
Look, Derek Stepan came to town, and that was a swing and a miss. No doubt about that. That was a miss by whoever decided from the Sens to make that deal. He had no game left. If you watched any of Boston this year, David Krejci still has game. He's not the player he was, but he's still got tons of game. First of all, he still put up 44 points in 51 games, I believe it was. Yep. He is terrific on the power play. He is a great faceoff guy, and he's very good defensively, and he's a right-handed center. So if you think about what, you know, if you think about Josh Norris as a left-handed center and a young guy who showed tons of promise last year, You know, as one of your top two guys, and you slot in a David Krejci type guy as your one A, one B with Norris as a right side faceoff guy, left side faceoff guy. Mm-hmm. You're talking about a right-handed center. Who's the second line left winger on this team? Tim Stützle. Wouldn't that be a nice little, and you know, people, oh, the skating for, you know what? You got a guy that, crafty guy like Krejci, with a, you know, a right-handed centerman with a left hand, with a good speedy left winger. I'm just, you know, and I'm not advocating a long-term contract. In fact, I would not give him more than 2 years max.
Right.
Because you got to save your money. You got to get all the old guys and all the useless guys off your books because Stutzla's, Norris's contract, they got the two guys this year, Tkachuk and Batherson. Next year, you got to deal with Norris. The year after that, you got to deal with Stützle and Sanderson are all coming up here in the next few years. And if you want to keep this, and those are the core, in my opinion, those are the core guys. Those are the guys you need to sign long-term to keep your core together and keep you competitive throughout. So you can't hamstring yourself by having, you know, signing long-term deals with these guys. And I think the Sens would be smart enough to realize that. But they still have cap room. So I would give him 2 years. I would be willing to actually overpay him a little bit to keep the term low. But
what's,
I think
what's
he would,
your idea of overpaying?
I don't
$3
know.
$3 million?
No, I think it's more than I think he'd get more. He could get more than that, Gordy, because I think there'd be interest.
Too. Yeah.
I think that number's probably four, maybe even five million. You might have to.
I wouldn't have a problem doing that. Now, 2 years might be a little bit long, but they took a gamble on Evgeny Dadonov last year and were willing to pay him $15 million over 3 years. Okay. And it didn't work out. They were willing to pay Derek Stepan. What was he making last year? Six? Five?
Well, the cap hit was six, but the money was only two or three, right?
Two or three?
Yeah.
Okay. And obviously it didn't work out. I'm a big believer in the expression, you're only as good as those around you, okay? And please don't perceive this as me coming to the defense of Derek Stepan, because my opinion is it didn't work out. It was not, in the long run, obviously, it was not a good signing, and it's unfortunate for the Senators that he had less game than they expected. But at the same time, I can make the excuse that you're only as good as those around you, okay? And the Senators are a young team and a lot of young players finding their way. Evgeny Dadonov played the year before, and he scored 27 goals with the Florida Panthers, which made him, and I think 11 of them were on the power play, a very enticing, unrestricted free agent to sign. But he also played with Sasha Barkov and Jonathan Huberdeau for quite a bit of his career in Florida. Two premier players in the National Hockey League, which the Ottawa Senators last year did not have. So, you know, and I'm not making excuses for these guys. They just didn't work out. The Stepans and the Dadonovs of the world did not work out, but A, for effort, you give it a try. You give it a shot. With a guy like David Krejci, who, if you can get him signed, it means he wants to come here because he does have options. And I wouldn't hesitate, to be honest. And I like your theory, because Josh Norris is going to be a number one center on this team for years to come. And I don't think Shane Pinto is that far off either of being 1A. Okay. I think Shane Pinto has the potential to be another David Krejci.
But wouldn't you like him to start in Belleville, I think, next year, all things being equal, even half a season?
Yeah, I'd have no issues with him mirroring Josh Norris and what Josh has done. First year in Belleville, and he's rookie of the year in the American Hockey League. He had a heck of a year, and it just helped his development. He got an opportunity to see a lot of ice time in a lot of different situations, and it translated into him being a comfortable NHL player in his first year. So, yeah, I wouldn't have a problem with that, but at the same time, I have zero issue with a young player coming in and earning a job. And I think Shane Pinto has the potential to earn a job. And I know it's a small sample size. We talked about this on Wednesday, a small sample size of but a dozen games that Pinto got to play for the Senators. But there was a reason why he was in the lineup, and it wasn't just to take a look at him. Mm-hmm. he was playing well enough to stay in the lineup.
His 200-foot game for a player stepping out of college, outstanding. You don't have to know hockey that well to go, okay, a guy playing his first NHL games shouldn't know to be in that spot in the defensive zone that he picked up immediately. He probably learned that, great coaching in college and maybe just a smart hockey player. I don't pretend to know him, But there are certain aspects of his game just in terms of how he plays the game where you just go, that's a hockey player.
Yeah.
And anything that he's able to add up, you know, offensively, and we'll see how that part of his game develops. It was pretty good in college. But the part that coaches love and are willing to give young players, he checks that box already. We saw DJ Smith trusted that kid right away.
100%.
A penalty killer, important time, late in games and tight games, all that. Shane Pinto was out there.
And it wasn't just to give him ice time. It was because he was earning his ice time. And that was one thing that DJ stressed from start to finish. You will earn your ice time. We're going to give you ice time if you have earned it. And, you know, I hate to keep harping on Chris Tierney. And he lost a great opportunity because of how he was playing. He lost an opportunity to be a first-line centerman. He lost his opportunity to see more power play time. It was because of how he played. And it wasn't the type of play that DJ Smith was looking for. And when you're talking about that 200-foot game, when you're talking about the commitment, the ability to be physical and want to be physical, all those little things add up to the big picture of getting ice time. And you're right. The word trust is a huge, huge word when it comes to the relationship between coach and player or player and coach. And if the coach has the trust of the player, he's going to use them.
So if Krejci decides he's going to go to market, I believe the Ottawa Senators will be in there pitching. Doesn't mean that they're going to get him. Doesn't mean that he would consider Ottawa. You know, maybe he's all about, if I'm going to leave Boston, I only want to go to a team that's going to win the Stanley Cup that I think has a chance. And I don't know. I don't think that many people think that Ottawa's there yet. Maybe soon, but not yet. So those are the parts of the equation that we don't know.
I'll tell you what, we talked about this with Dave Poulin, and he's high on Dave's list. He's top of the list for me of available unrestricted free agents. I would in a heartbeat. And unfortunately for Ottawa, they've got options here with different players. Nick Paul can play center. He can play the wing. Colin White can play center. He can play the wing. Casey Cizikas is somebody I would target in a heartbeat to become your third or fourth line centerman on this team. And I think a lot has to do with Colin White and your belief in whether he can turn into a number two, number three centerman on this team or even in the NHL, or is he better suited to having more success on the wing? Casey Cizikas is a proven player who elevates team play. You want to talk about team energy? You want to talk about physicality? You want to talk about the type of player DJ Smith is looking for? If DJ Smith hasn't recommended Casey Cizikas, well, he doesn't need to. I think it's very, very obvious. Casey Cizikas' play speaks for itself. You put him on a line with Austin Watson and maybe Nick Paul on the wing. What kind of third, fourth line do you get there? You get one of the best in the league.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said, Gord. My only concern, and I like the player too, my only concern is he's going to get term and money from whomever signs him, and I think he probably ends up going back to the island. And again, I'm saving my pennies for the big boys. And I think he's going to be a guy who's going to be making pretty big dollars, probably on a 4 or 5 year contract. And I'd be worried by the time I'm ready to compete for the Stanley Cup, that guy's going to be taking up too much of my cap for the value that you're talking about bringing to the table. That'd be my only concern, but there's lots to like about that player for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. There was lots of like about JG Peugeot, though, too.
Yeah, good point. 9:35. We'll take a break. Come back. Your thoughts and anything we chat about is always welcome. You can text us at 12-1200. Tweet at us at TSN1200 as we continue along. When we come back, I want to let you listen to the comments of NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman. First time he's spoken publicly about the Montreal Canadiens' controversial decision to draft Logan Mailloux in the draft last week. We'll hear from the commissioner when we come back right here on TSN 1200.
This is TSN 1200.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Friday morning, Gord Wilson sitting in for Simmer. We're here till 10 o'clock. Steve Lloyd and Graham Creech will take over in the box coming up after 10. And then Lee and AJ are on the drive this afternoon at 2 o'clock. So Commissioner Gary Bettman was on NHL radio yesterday, NHL Power Play with Steve Koulias. And I believe this is the first time that we have heard from the commissioner with his reaction to the most controversial part of last weekend's NHL draft. And, of course, that was the Montreal Canadiens' decision to choose Logan Mailloux at the end of the first round. I think it's well documented his story. We don't need to go through that. And I think most people know as well that he asked not to be drafted. Montreal Canadiens decided to draft him anyway. Here was the reaction of Gary Bettman when asked about the Montreal Canadiens' decision yesterday.
I was stunned. Surprised wouldn't begin to explain my reaction. You know, I'm a dad of two daughters. I have four granddaughters, and what was done was horrific. And everybody's focusing on the player. He said he didn't want to be drafted. The Canadiens drafted him anyway. There's no mechanism not to be drafted. It's not within the player's control in any circumstance to decide when he wants to be drafted. Jeff Molson, I believe, yesterday acknowledged that the Canadiens made a mistake and apologized, and that this is something that's going to require evaluation going forward. From our standpoint, they've made clear, the Canadiens have, that they're not signing him right now, that he's not going to training camp or rookie camp. They're going to continue to see how this evolves, how he progresses, to evaluate and reevaluate his situation. And at the appropriate time, we may be called on if and when they want him to play and he wants to play. We'll see where we come out on that. But that's something that will require consideration and evaluation in the future. I don't think anybody should lose sight of the impact of what happened on the victim and the victim's families. And while Jeff said the Canadiens and Logan are going to try and make good, we're going to have to see what that means moving forward in all contexts.
All right. Again, we thank NHL Radio for that. So, again, that's the first time we've heard from Gary Bettman on a topic, maybe the biggest topic in the National Hockey League over the last week that didn't involve players and free agency. What do you think about what he had to say there? He sounds angry. Like, you know, sometimes Gary Bettman, to me, is the master of spin. That actually sounded like a real person
Yeah, very genuine. Reaction. No question about that. I don't think there's any doubt he should have sounded that way. I think anybody who's discussed this topic has been sounded as disgusted as Gary Bettman has been. Look, at the NHL, like any corporation, like any business, JR, that has a hint of controversy around it, wants to avoid controversy at all costs. And the last thing the business needs, any business needs, is to have the controversy resurface. And certainly there was controversy, not with the NHL, but the potential in the NHL of Logan Mailloux in his draft year coming out and saying, after being charged in Sweden, coming out and saying, "Do not draft me. I am not worthy of coming into the National Hockey League," which is a privilege for everyone who gets a chance to play there. Well, what the Montreal Canadiens did, unspeakable, if you ask me, but what they did was completely ignore his wishes. They looked at Logan Mailloux as a player who's 6'3", and I think he's grown an inch from what I understand, 6'4" now, maybe 220 pounds. And his last stat lines in the GOJHL were very impressive. And while he didn't play a whole lot with the London Knights last year or 2 years ago, he did play over in Sweden, and there were mistakes made. And they went ahead and looked at the package that is Logan Mailloux, not the actual person who's Logan Mailloux, and they drafted 31st overall. It's no one. And what did they do as a result of that? They got the hockey world, more than just the hockey world, talking about the National Hockey League and its values and Logan's values and the Montreal Canadiens' values. And it's hard to put into words what they were thinking, because you can't understand what they were thinking. I got to be Trevor Timmons, their assistant general manager, director of player development, or whatever he might be, director of scouting, I think is what his title is. Mm-hmm. He's a friend of mine. I can't figure out for the life of me what the whole organization was thinking. And now with Jeff Molson coming out, making statements to the contrary of the actions that were done, you have to wonder. Look, somebody told me, who's very much in the know and knows the Molson family, told me Saturday morning after this draft was, after he was picked Friday night, said, there's no way the Molson family is going to accept this. And this guy knows the Molson family. He's coached the Molson family's son and said, there's no way the family is going to accept this. And it only a matter of time before they came out with the statement that they came out with. But my heavens, it's just, it's
don't you
mind-boggling.
Think, don't you think that the statement that, this is why it's not, you know, not believable to me that, that Jeff Molson isn't involved. And whether he was asked or not to sign off on the actual pick in the first place, he in essence has signed off on it through his actions. And that's twofold. First of all, they did not renounce the draft pick in the first place. So
they could have. They had the opportunity to.
This was an opportunity to do that. And the second, the other part of it, Gord, to me, they released this statement in the middle of the busiest day on the NHL calendar. They put this out on the in the afternoon of free agency when 128 players signed $576 million worth of contracts. We live in Ottawa where we know, how do you bury bad news? You bury bad news on a Friday afternoon when people aren't listening. Or if we're talking about the National Hockey League, you bury it in the middle of a day in which everybody's talking about trades and free agency or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That,
no question.
That to me is organizational arrogance. That's what that is. And that to me is a team president in Jeff Molson, a team owner, whatever, you know, however many titles that he has there. Yeah, he signed off on whether he signed off on the pick in the first place, he has signed off on it through their actions. Both in terms of the timing of it and through their lack of renouncing of the draft pick.
Yeah, he's there's no question.
He's as deep in this as everybody else.
All calculated. And the Montreal Canadiens have a public relations firm, I'm guessing, better than most companies. But this has taken a turn for the worse that perhaps wasn't anticipated by what should be a very strong public relations, media relations based team.
Well, and I don't know that it has turned for the worse, Gord, because I read a story yesterday and I don't remember who wrote it, but part of the reason I think the organization came out with a statement was the fact that he had a number of the team's major sponsors,
at least
who
four,
expressed concern over the decision to draft him and in essence are saying, we're not sure we want to park our money with you in the meantime.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden, oh wow, the team comes out with a statement. And then yesterday I read a story that says, you know, the words to the effect of, it sounds like the sponsors are okay with things now. The statement has been able to calm the waters, as it were, by, you know, saying all these empty words about we'll work with them and yada yada yada. It's just all spin. It's
yada,
all spin.
Yada, yada.
Spin.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with you. It leaves you speechless. Here's the bottom line here. Montreal wanted this player, and Montreal got him, okay? And from a Bettman point of view, this subject, this controversy, and guess what? When training camps open up and there's no Logan Mailloux, his name is still going to come up. He's still going to surface in conversation that will be around the National Hockey League because there will be reports of no Logan Mailloux at Montreal's rookie camp,
right.
No Logan Mailloux at training camp. But the bottom line is, he's Montreal Canadiens property, and because they haven't renounced the pick, and will remain Montreal's property, and he'll get his wish and not attend a training camp or have an opportunity to play in the NHL this year, because I think the Canadiens will go to that degree or that length to keep him out of the limelight. But without question, this name will surface when training camps open in September.
They have done this kid as well. And look, I don't have any time for him, but an incredible disservice as well by going against his wishes.
Yeah,
absolutely. If all the teams, and I know they said, well, there's a bunch of other teams that would have picked him if we didn't. If they didn't pick him and allowed him the opportunity, as he said, to grow his character and prove that, you know, he is recognized his wrongs and is on the path to the right thing, and another year passes, I think he is still a controversial draft pick next year, but not nearly to the level now. Now, this is going to follow him for however his professional career, if it does evolve, this is going to follow him for way longer now. He is always going to be seen. And listen, he made his own bed, okay? He's 17 years old. He made a terrible, terrible mistake. And I believe in second chances and people should be given opportunity and all that. But you also need time to learn from your mistakes. The Montreal Canadiens really didn't allow this kid to learn from his mistakes. We'll say we'll bypass the personal character thing because we like the hockey player. This kid is going to have now a shadow over him. Again, it's of his own making in the first place, but Montreal did him no favors by doing this now.
There's talk that he may not even be allowed to go to London and finish his junior career with the Knights. Like, what is going to happen to this young man? And you're right. If he wasn't drafted at his request, it's almost out of sight, out of mind. All right, let him do his thing. Let him get the healing process underway. Let the victim get her healing process and her family's process underway. But this lingers now. It sticks around for both sides. And totally unnecessary. It did not have to happen. That's the bottom line. But as you said, Canadians got their player.
Anyway, this will be I talk about stories that evolve, and this will be a story that continues to evolve and bubble, and we'll see how it all transpires. I don't know if this is the last of it. I think there's another couple of spikes in this storyline before we start the next hockey season. Yep. All right, 9:53. We're going to take a break and come back with a final segment. We'll bring you up to date on all the Olympic stuff. We can tell you who Canada is going to play in the women's soccer semifinal, like the Canadian game. The other game, the quarterfinal between the U.S. and Netherlands, also went to penalty kicks. Very dramatic end, like the Canadian game. So we'll come back. We'll fill you in on all that and get you set for a relatively busy, but not overly busy, sports weekend ahead. The long weekend as we carry on here for a Friday morning, right here on Sports Radio, TSN 1200.
This is TSN 1200.
All right,
this is TSN 1200.
Welcome back. 9:57, our final moments with you. Gordon Wilson sitting in for Simmer today. And to bring you up to date, and again, Canada won a gold medal in women's rowing last night. Earlier this morning, women's soccer. Canada, Brazil, scoreless through 120 minutes. They went to penalty kicks. Christine Sinclair missed the first kick for Canada. Brazil slotted in three in a row beautifully. So in the best of five, they're up 3-2 after three shots. Canada scores to make it 3-3. And then Stephanie Labbé, the Canadian goalie, makes a save in the fourth shot. So now it's 3-3 going to the fifth and final shot. How about the only Ottawa girl on the Canadian team? Ottawa woman, sorry. Vanessa Gilles steps up with a fifth and final shot. All the pressure is on her, and she just bangs it right in the top corner. Perfect penalty kick to put Canada up, and then Labbé saves the next Brazilian shot as well. So Canada survives 4-3 on penalties to advance to the semifinal. Who will they play in the semifinal? Hit me like it's 2012 all over again. It's Canada and the United States in the semifinals. The U.S. just beat the Dutchies, also in penalty kicks. It's amazing when you can have Alex Morgan and Megan Rapinoe take penalty kicks for you. They won 4-2 on penalty kicks. So it'll be Canada and the United States in the semifinal in women's soccer. I don't need to remind you the last time these two teams played in the semifinal at the Olympics. It's 2012. Christine Sinclair has scored a hat trick for Canada. They're leading the U.S. 3-2 late in the match when this happens.
A catch greeted by roars around Old Trafford. Canada have plenty of supporters here. The United States likewise. And they are being served up an absolute treat here. Nails being bitten.
Oh, look at this.
Now then.
The referee has given an indirect free kick saying that McLeod
Is it steps?
Yeah, no, too long.
Too long.
Too long.
The six-step rule went out ages ago. She's taken far too long to get rid of this.
All right, so that was the moment of controversy in the 78th minute as Canada is leading 3-2 and Canadian keeper Erin McLeod is ruled by the referee to have taken too long after she made a save to actually kick the ball away. Delay, which we see all the time in soccer. It is a call that is rarely, if ever, made. It was certainly not warranted in that case, but it was. And so an indirect free kick was given. The Americans took it. It was kicked into the box. There was a handball.
Canada. It just gets worse from here.
So then it was a penalty kick.
They scored
on the penalty kick to tie the game. The game went to extra time. The Americans ended up winning. I think it was Alex Morgan ended up scoring the winning goal.
It was.
In
it
extra
was
time to win 4-3. And man alive. I remember watching that. It was the August long week. Well, I don't even know. It was the August long weekend Monday. And is the Canadian-American game on Monday? I'll have to look at the schedule. It was the Monday afternoon. I remember that, being at home watching that and being completely outraged as a Canadian soccer fan over one of the worst calls I've ever seen in my life. It's Monday. There we go.
Monday, early riser, 4 a.m.
It's like the circle of life, baby. Just seeing. But listen, there's no greater rival. There's no greater women's soccer team than the Americans. There'd be no sweeter win for Christine Sinclair and Canada than to beat the Americans in the semifinals. So that's the way, that's going to be a monster television number coming up on Monday.
How about the Canada men's team playing Mexico yesterday?
Yes, and the Gold Cup.
Almost a brawl at the end of it.
Oh,
good Canadian boys there.
Yep. Yeah, they ended up losing in stoppage time, 2-1, but a great performance. They're missing their best two players for the entire tournament. So that was great for men's soccer as well. So anyway, I said monster number. It's 4 a.m. in the morning, so relatively speaking. I know people are getting up on their holiday Monday to watch soccer. Maybe they'll PVR it and watch it later. All right.
Here's the one take that I get from all of this here. And, I love AJ's call of soccer, the Atletico, on our radio station. If we can get him a British accent, it would be that much more entertaining. Even if he fakes it.
You know what? Or even just using some of the terms. You know, it's like when Doc Emmerich did hockey, he just used these terms that no one else uses, right?
Yeah, no.
The British soccer announcers, they just have the turn of the phrase that no one else uses. That it's just so unique to soccer, makes it so great.
I
don't care what anybody says. I thought you've done a great job today, so appreciate.
Well, just here to boost the ratings of this morning show and the radio station in total. And you're welcome.
Yeah,
thanks
appreciate
for having
it.
Me.